Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's going on? Officially now Smack Off Week. Here in the jungle, we came up big with a huge Monday show to kick it all off. In honor of Smack Off Week, Connor and Draymond gave us a teaser with a little Smack Off preview of their own on Instagram. I break that down. Plus, Jordan Spieth went cold-blooded, locking up his third major win. And like I said, because it is Smack Off Week, I open it up to you clones to find out exactly where and how you'll be listening on Friday. And we had three nice guests from SI and Golf Magazine, Alan Shipnook, New York Post MLB columnist Joel Sherman, and Arizona Cardinals linebacker Carlos Dansby. So, Alvin, exactly what are we waiting for? Do what you do and let it roll. It is Smack Off Week. And in the spirit of Smack Off Week, Conor McGregor is letting the smack fly. And that's where I want to start. Conor is letting it fly, except it's not at Floyd Mayweather. Instead, he's going at another smack alpha. Draymond Green, of all guys. Yes, I said it. Draymond Green. So you're probably wondering, how the hell did that happen? How are a UFC champ and an NBA champ spitting venom? Two of the very best of the best at that game. Why are they after each other right now? Easy to figure out. Draymond Instagrammed a pic of Conor wearing a Warriors 23 throwback jersey with the caption, quote, "We rocking with Floyd, bro, not you. Take that off, brah." Yeah, because Conor was going to do that. Because Conor was going to do that. Because Conor was just going to sit there and take that. Sure he wasn't. And he fired right back saying, quote, "That's CJ Watson, mate. I don't know who the bleep you are. No disrespect, though, kid. Keep hustling and stay in school." End quote. It's so incredible. First of all, I'd be shocked if Conor didn't know who Draymond was. That's why saying he doesn't know who he is and saying, quote, "keep hustling and stay in school," end quote, is so funny. I mean, pretty amazing that a former plumber's apprentice is telling somebody else to stay in school. Except Conor wasn't done. He never is. He then chased it with, quote, "Now, ask yourself why I'm rocking CJ when I don't know or give a bleep about basketball. I dribble heads off the floor, not a ball. There is no game here, kid." End of quote. I mean, again, where do I even start? "I dribble heads" is a great line. "There is no game here, kid." Another great line. But I'm guessing some of you are also wondering why Conor was wearing a CJ Watson jersey instead of Monte Ellis or Stack Jack or maybe even Austin Crozier. Why? Well, that's because Mayweather's former partner Josie Harris allegedly traded romantic text messages with Watson. And it reminds everybody of the incident that led to Mayweather pleading guilty to domestic violence charges. In other words, it's reminding everybody of the absolute worst in Mayweather. So McGregor's always been the very best at trolling. He's always been the very best at trolling. That's trolling 2.0. Now, is that low blow? It's not. It isn't. Hell no, it's not. If you plead guilty to domestic violence, then you cannot complain about low blows. So then Draymond jumps back in. Draymond responds saying, quote, "Ha ha 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 ha. That number won't be worn again when I'm finished with it, clown. Gold medalist, NBA champ, all-star, DPOY, etc. Ha 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 ha. Stop it, boy. Nate Diaz, Bay Area, stand up. Whooped you in your ring. Money May about to destroy you. Take that Warrior jersey off, brah. You're an incredible internet troll. We don't rock with you. Go train, bum." End quote. But the truth is, this isn't about Draymond or Watson. It really is all about Money May. It's all about Mayweather. And it's about McGregor doing what McGregor does, taking his troll game to the next level. Is it going to work? It usually does. Is it going to work here? I'm not so sure. I would have said that Mayweather is just too smart for that. But then again, you see him now saying that he's going to go toe-to-toe with Conor. And you think for a minute, maybe? Maybe it's working. Maybe he is getting under his skin. Maybe it's working. But you know it's not. Floyd has never really gone toe-to-toe with anybody, and now is not the time to start. Saying that he's going to turn a fight with McGregor into a brawl is not a strategy for winning a fight. It's a strategy for selling pay-per-views. A strategy for getting people to believe that Conor may actually have a chance of winning this fight. But that's not what Floyd's going to do. Why do you think he took the fight? Because he knows the only way Conor can touch him if he stands right in front of him. And that's the last thing Floyd's going to do. Something he's never done with anybody else. It's just not what Floyd does. Now, Conor, on the other hand, is doing what Conor always does. Looking to get in a guy's head, under his skin, and running some of the most legendary smack ever. I don't know that Conor can win a boxing match, but the next smack battle that this guy loses will be the first. He's the very best in the world at this. Maybe the best there ever was at that. And this is Smack Off week. But then again, for Conor, every day is the Smack Off, and he wins every single day. He dominates every single day. Alan Shipnook is my guest. Now, you've had some time to think about it and some time to reflect upon it. So when you look back on yesterday's final round and the performance of Jordan Spieth, what stands out to you the most?
You know, it's interesting. People have always wanted to compare Spieth to Tiger Woods just because of what he's accomplished at such a young age. And I've always felt like the comparison to Phil Mickelson was a little bit better because Spieth, there's a volatility to his game and an unpredictability, kind of like Phil. You know, he can look sublime and ridiculous often during the same round. And, I mean, we saw that during the final round. You know, that shot on 13 will go down as probably the worst drive any player has ever hit en route to winning a major championship. And, you know, but Jordan really married the best of both Tiger and Phil. You know, he scrambled like Phil, and then he closed like Tiger. And it was an incredible performance. It was, you know, kind of a monument to the kid's grit and his heart and his head. We know he's a talented golfer, but he has all those intangibles that really separate the very good from the very best. And that was absolutely on display yesterday. And it puts Spieth in a whole different stratosphere. I mean, he's clearly the most important player of this current generation. I think he's usurped that title from Rory McIlroy. He's on a historic pace, whether you compare him to Tiger or Jack or anybody. And where he goes from here is really the biggest question in golf, because he could do anything at this point.
You know, there's so much in that I want to respond to, but I want to go back to your first point, Alan. Alan Shipnook is my guest. The point that he's not so much Tiger as he is Phil Mickelson. Fact of the matter is, you called that even before that round. On Saturday, he had a bogey-free 65, and you tweeted, macho round by Spieth, and it's hard to see him not winning, but he does have more Phil in him than Tiger. That volatility makes Sunday interesting. So you called it before it happened, but were you ever thinking that he would come out with three bogeys on his first four holes yesterday?
Well, and especially missing short putts. You don't expect that. But, I mean, even when Spieth won the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, he made a god-awful double bogey on the 71st hole, which could have defined his entire reputation if he hadn't birdied the last and had Dustin hand him the trophy. I mean, obviously, we know what happened at Masters last year when he rinsed two at Rays Creek. I mean, when he was chasing the Grand Slam at the Old Course, on the 71st hole, he missed a pretty short putt, and he made two horrible swings on the last hole. And so even when he's won or he's been there in contention, he's made mistakes. And so I don't think there's ever any doubt he was going to be tested during the final round. There would be a crisis of his own making. couldn't have predicted it would be as spectacular as it was. And, you know, most players in that situation on the 13th hole would have completely panicked and lost their head, and their heart rate would have been going at about 220, and they would have made a triple bogey and blown themselves out of the tournament. I mean, for Spieth to rally and save bogey, I mean, it's probably the greatest bogey in golf history, and obviously it propelled him forward from there. So you knew it was going to happen at some point. I mean, he was never going to go out and have, you know, 17 pars and a birdie. That's just not how the kid plays. He's all over the place, and that's why he's so compelling. But it was one of the really all-time great turnabouts in the middle of a round. I mean, guys can play poorly one day and find it on the range and play well the next day. It's really hard to right the ship in the middle of a round when the whole world is watching and history is on the line. And you know, Spieth has the ability to do that. It's just incredible fortitude and focus and just kind of the ability to slow down and and reset. And in any sport, it's hard to do that in the middle of competition. In golf, which is so internal, and where you really have no teammates, to lean on it. It's an incredible ability that he has.
Clones, how about you sharing a second with me so I can talk to you about Ferguson? Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products, but what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Alan Chipnuck, my guest. One thing to have the best bogey ever, but just getting out of that with a bogey is one thing. But then he goes birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie. So given the situation and the circumstances, have you ever seen anything quite like that?
No, not with the stakes that high. I mean, it was just phenomenal. I mean, when he hit that tee shot on 14 and almost stuffed it next to the flag and flirted with a hole in one, you could just feel the momentum switch. Even though he was one down at that point, you started feeling sorry for Matt Kuchar, because Kuchar is the quintessential kind of soft golfer who just is not ready for a fight. And Spieth wanted to brawl. I mean, you could see in his eyes. It was almost like, that bogey was like smelling salts or something, and it just woke Jordan up. And all of a sudden, he gets this gunslinger look. I mean, Ben Crenshaw compared him to Wyatt Earp, and his eyes narrow, and his face gets, he just gets this look, and there's not a game face like that in golf. I mean, there's really not. Tiger had it at some points, but when Spieth gets that look in his eye, you know it's coming. I mean, he's just one of those athletes who can very quickly get in the zone and do amazing things. And it's not an accident that so many of his victories have been punctuated by hole outs or long putts or spectacular moments. He has a certain magic to him that is rare in any sport, especially in golf. And he just found it at exactly the right time yesterday.
Yeah, we're talking about 15, too. I mean, what do you make of that eagle putt on 15 and then the shout of "go get it" to Michael Greller?
It was perfect. It's like, the thing is, he didn't even, there was no celebration. He probably had just won the Open with that putt. But, he's already on to the next tee. He just wants to play the next hole. He wants to keep going. It's like, Greller, get me the ball so I can hit it again. I'm not ready to concede anything. And I thought that was great. I mean, that was vintage Spieth, where, the whole world is losing its mind, whether it's on Twitter or in real life. And he was the coolest guy out there. Like, okay, I made an eagle. That was cool. Now I want to go make another birdie. And that's part of his fighter's mentality. He was a very, very good baseball player. He was he's a lefty. He's kind of like Ben Hogan. He's left-handed, but he swings a golf club right-handed. So he's got that dominant arm leading the swing, which some people think is really advantageous. But, Spieth was a great baseball player. He was money as a three-point shooter playing basketball. And he grew up with some really strong athletes in Dallas, guys who played college football and college basketball. And his whole life, he hardly lost at anything. They had this little core group of kids. They dominated every sport at every level. And so he's not this golf nerd who grew up in a vacuum on the driving range. I mean, he's a serious athlete and competitor. And he brings that, to the fight in a way that most golfers just can't relate to. And so that's part of his competitive DNA. And he likes those situations. He's not afraid of those one-on-one matchups like he had with Kuchar. You never felt like Kuchar was in his comfort zone. He was just kind of into the middle of the green and playing kind of cautious golf. And he had Spieth on the ropes, but he just couldn't land that knockout punch. He just doesn't have that same flintiness or that same hardness that Spieth does. And, we obviously saw that in the closing holes.
I mean, so many different numbers from Jordan Spieth winning the Open. 13. The absurd hole that changed everything. 28. One of the rules that Spieth used on 13. 24-2. Another rule that he used on 13. 3. The number of majors he now has. 3. The Sunday morning lead that he quickly gave away. And 3. The number of words that he used to slam the door. Go get that. Jordan Spieth, again, to me, didn't just win a major yesterday, he won a couple. Because if he lost that one, after the way he lost the Masters last year, that would have left a serious scar. Serious scar, and he himself admitted as much.
I put a lot of pressure on myself, unfortunately, and not on purpose before the round today, just thinking, you know, this is the best opportunity that I've had since the 16 Masters. And if it weren't to go my way today, then all I'm going to be questioned about and thought about and murmured about is in comparison to that. And that adds a lot of pressure to me. After four holes, it was even more so. And I wasn't questioning myself as a closer, but I was questioning why I couldn't just, you know, perform the shots that I was before.
Yeah, pretty much so as everybody else. I want to point out this guy's still not 24. And in an answer like that, he gave you more insight and more personality than I ever saw from Tiger Woods ever. Pretty much in his entire career. But in terms of people were questioning why he could not perform the shots that he had before, yeah, pretty much. Because after starting that day with a 3-shot lead, he bogeyed 3 of the first 4 holes. So forget about a back 9 collapse. That was a front 9 implosion. And it was hard to watch. At the turn, his 37 and Matt Kuchar's 34 left them equal. Spieth was leaking oil and gas all over Royal Birkdale and filling his own head with questions and doubts and everybody else too. But then came 13. And that shank tee shot that set off a series of truly bizarre events. And that was a pretty horrible tee shot. But things just got so weird after that. It lands in the hay of the dune and was declared an unplayable lie. Rule 28, for those of you keeping score at home. Then he elects to drop further back on the same line to the flagstick, which took him to the driving range. But the direct line took him into an equipment truck, which falls under the category of temporary immovable obstructions. And then according to Rule 24-2. And it entitled him to the sightline relief. I mean, never has a series of rulings taken so long, been so important, it actually been so compelling. Lurching from one spot to the next, it had all the makings of Ray's Creek 2, or Jean Vandeveld, the sequel. And yet somehow, it never happened. Somehow, this guy didn't melt down. He came through. And never have you seen a longer, stranger, or more clutch bogey on the back nine of a major. Finishing that hole with a single putt after what felt like 5 hours on that hole was so impressive. That was so brass. That guy should have been dead. Should have been dead at that point. But somehow, he slams the paddles on himself and he goes to work. Then he plays the next four holes in 5-under. The 199-yard approach on 14 that almost went in. The 30-foot bird on 16. The 7-footer on 17. And of course, that epic eagle on 15 when he rolled in the monster putt, pointed at the ball in the hole, and told his caddy to go get that.
When it gets near the hole, come on, Jordan.
You are joking. You've got to be kidding.
Go get that. Go get that. An amazing line. That was a win the major and drop the mic moment all at once. Freaking unreal reaction to an unreal putt on an unreal day. And now he's not answering questions. He doesn't have to answer questions about how it all fell apart, but rather about how he kept it all together. And now he's got a third major. And next month, he's playing for the career Grand Slam. And again, the guy's still not 24. And one hole did not change the day or the tournament, but it changed everything. And after all that talk about the next guy, maybe that next guy is standing right in front of you. Jordan Spieth. Maybe. Maybe 6 foot. Maybe a 185 if you put a couple of 10-pound dumbbells in each pocket. The guy doesn't bomb it. Can barely keep it in the fairway at times. But a guy with the stones to overcome that flame out for the ages at Augusta and then pull himself out of the jet wash to win the Open. I mean, a guy who looked absolutely cooked, but finds a way to shoot the best 169 in the history of the game. round jungle favorite elk called one of the greatest mental rounds ever, end quote. And after looking dead to rights and ready to be branded with the choker label twice in as many years, Spieth shrugs it off, mans up, and rips back the jug. What an absolute man's game performance. Jordan freaking Spieth, if you need him. I can't say enough about what I saw yesterday. This email says, Jimmy, Jordan Spieth and I share the same birthday. I'm just 1 year older. He woke up and won his third major under massive pressure. I woke up slightly hung and burnt the bacon I wanted for breakfast. The dude is a freak on the links, a magician, a wizard. After the episode on 13, he could have easily collapsed. Instead, he goes, birdie, eagle, birdie, cold-blooded. Colder than your girlfriend Sandra after you call her Julie. And he's only damn near 24. Stephen Eden Prairie. I remember the first time I spoke to him, and I thought to myself, God, there's no way. There's no way that guy is like 21 years old. And now he's 23, and he's almost 24, and I played that soundbite of what he had to say and what was going through his mind and how much pressure he had on himself. And like I said, this guy, he's got more insight, more personality. He gave me more in that answer than in anything I've ever heard Tiger Woods say before or after a round of golf in his entire career. I got more insight and more respect for that than anything I ever heard Woods say ever, or anything that Woods ever will say. Different guy now. Different guy. I mean, I'm not saying that he's Tiger Woods. I'm not saying that he's going to win 14 majors. I'm not saying he's going to get anywhere near there. I am saying he's already got three, and he could have a career slam right at the age of 24. But the guy's just so interesting and composed, despite what happened. In fact, not despite what happened at Augusta, but because of what happened at Augusta. To start the way that he did and not fall apart, I agree with Elk. That might have been the best mental round of golf I've ever seen. Rome, headline should read, Spieth wins on technicality. He should have been buried, but due to the bylaws of golf, which are seemingly more complex than our nation's parole hearing guidelines, Spieth, like OJ, was able to wiggle free and take his proper place on the Iron Throne. GOAT. Cam in Maine. You could say it was on technicality. I'm going to say that was one of the best mental rounds of golf I've ever seen. Guy was incredible. Joel Sherman is my guest. Before we get into specific teams and scenarios, generally speaking, Joel, as you talk to sources, what's your sense as to how the next week is going to play out? Do you expect some big moves?
Yeah, I expect big moves, but I would throw in a couple of caveats, Jim. Number one, I think this is as many significant moves as we've had pre the final week of the deadline, and the deadline's a week from today, as I could remember. You know, the Quintana trade, the big trade where the Yankees get three guys in one deal. Seattle's already gotten David Phelps. I mean, there's been four or five significant deals with a week still left. The other thing is, like, what does this scramble of teams in the American League mean? The Rangers just kind of swept the series. They went from, hey, we should probably trade you Darvish, to we should probably keep you Darvish. Does that change again in the next few days? It's a very fluid, sensitive time, and things can move. And then the other situation is you have significant division leaders. And what's the pressure on significant division leaders? As we're sitting here today, Dodgers are up 10.5 games. The Nationals are up 12 games. The Astros are up 17 games. So for them, they do not have to make a trade, Jim, to get to October. They're thinking about what can we do to get through October, very much like the Indians and Cubs last year going out and getting Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman when they were in kind of like serious, similar dominant positions last year. They were not thinking about how do we get win a division. They were thinking, how do we win 11 games in October? And so I think that begins to move around guys like Zach Britton. Is he healthy? If he is, he becomes a big chip that multiple teams, Houston, the Dodgers, several others, will certainly be looking at down the stretch of this deadline. But again, it's sensitive. It's like the Rangers with Darvish. It's going to be like people are really going to focus on, like, what do you believe about Zach Britton? Because the last thing you can have happen to you is, hey, we just sent three or four big prospects to Baltimore. He started three times, broke down, had Tommy John surgery. We didn't get him this year, and we didn't get him next year, you know, which is he's a year and a half player. So I think this is a very sensitive time, and you could convince me with a week to go to the deadline. I realize this is a mouthful. You could convince me with a week to go to the deadline. This is going to be a very busy deadline.
Joel Sherman joining us. Joel,
that the scenarios are set up that it will not be.
Joel Sherman is my guest. Excuse me, Joel. There's a ton of good information in that. So let me just start with the L.A. Dodgers since I'm here in L.A. They've got the best record in baseball, but Clayton Kershaw goes back down with a back injury yesterday. You tweeted, Joel, just a few minutes ago that they're hopeful that he will be back in 4 to 6 weeks. That said, how worried are you if you're Andrew Friedman and Dave Roberts right now?
Yeah, from what I understand, this is according to their initial medical reports, and I want to be cautious about saying that, their initial medical reports is this is not nearly as serious as the injury that cost Kershaw 9 weeks last year. I sense that they also probably see the positive in the negative, which is if you back off of him for 4 to 6 weeks and you get him back, let's make a date, September 5th. You've just pretty much changed him from a 220-inning pitcher this year to about 165, 170, 170, whatever number that's going to be in there. And probably in their truest desires, as long as Kershaw kind of gets back to being Clayton Kershaw over the last 3-4 weeks of the regular season, that works to his benefit because they're going to have to push him and rely upon him in October to try to win their first championship since 1988. And so there might actually be a blessing in this curse for them.
Joel Sherman joining us. All right, so he missed those 9 weeks last year, so maybe it's not as bad now as it was then. In addition, you have a piece up on NewYorkPost.com breaking down where Justin Verlander is right now. He's got an ERA, Joel, below 3 in his 2 starts since the All-Star break. It's not a huge sample size, but when you consider the fact that he has been better in the second half than the first half for each of the last 3 years, what do you think other teams make of where he is right now?
So I think the key thing there, Jim, is what are the Tigers thinking and what are they willing to do? I think that there would be great interest in Justin Verlander if the Tigers turned him, he's due $28 million both in 2018 and 2019. If he suddenly became an $18 million a year starter or a $20 million a year starter for those 2 years, I think the Tigers could reach into a couple of teams' better prospects because of the bulldog tenacity of Verlander. Let's not forget, he almost won the Cy Young last year. People always say he's not, you know, vintage Justin Verlander. And I'm like, I agree. But the guy who pitched last year and has pitched the second half of the last 3 seasons and started this one has been a very high-end starter with 15 or 16 career postseason starts where he's generally pitched well. He's the kind of guy I think teams would go ahead and take a gamble on, but they want the Tigers to make him a less expensive piece and or get less back in prospects. And it does not seem from the people I'm talking to that the Tigers are mentally there to do one or the other yet. And that's a dangerous place to be because where they are in their cycle, they're not really close to winning a championship right now. And this is maybe the last best moment to turn Justin Verlander into 3 or 4 pieces that help speed up that process. And I think they have to think seriously about how to manage that and get that done.
All right, so if they are willing to move him, can you see where the Dodgers might be interested in him?
I think that the Dodgers, if that number came down, would be interested. But from everything I've heard, Jim, you know, there again, I would just keep going back to the Dodgers know they are playing a division series in October pretty much now. You know, I guess they could blow a double-digit lead with 2 months left, but it's not common, not likely. They've got a great core even without Kershaw. You know, Jansen, Seager, Bellinger, Turner, you know, they're going to win 90-whatever-plus games. Colorado and Arizona probably aren't going to get there. So they know they're in a division series. So the thing is not just to get a starter, if that's what they focus on, but to get a starter that helps them get through October. And that's why I've heard that their focus was really on Yu Darvish, because he's a guy you could imagine if you have Kershaw, Darvish, Hill, Wood. Now you're talking about sending out pretty much a top starter every day, shortening games, and I think that's where their mindset's at. And everything I've heard on July 24th, and again, I want to be sensitive to July 24th, is Yu Darvish is not available right now. Rangers lose three in a row? Let's have another conversation in 3 days.
Van Smack, what an honor to be a part of the first annual Great American Smack Off. Today the jungle proves that there are a few Tarzans. The rest are a bunch of cheetah chimps who wish they had game like
that. It is here. It is Smack Off week. 4 days, 36 segments total until the biggest show of the year in the jungle. I mean, the Smack Off is to the jungle what the Oscars are to Hollywood. To put it in sports terms, Game 7 of the World Series, the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Final combined, all rolled into one. It is the best of the best, all laying it on the line for a $5,000 first prize. Second place gets nothing, nothing but shame. And we're on to our 23rd installment. Honestly, it gets bigger and bigger every single year. An email did ping my inbox late last week, and it read, quote, "Romulus, first time ever I took the day off for the Smack Off. It's gotten too big and too good to listen to at work anymore. Can't wait. See you Friday." From Mark Hickson. He nailed it. It has gotten too big. It's too big and too important to try to listen to in your cubicle. I understand that. It is to the point where it takes your full, undivided attention for three full hours, or you might miss the epic moment. Look, you don't want to be called into a meeting in the middle of Vic in NoCal rolling out Marv Albert's safe word.
Because you're about to get dominated like Marv Albert when he forgets the safe word. Alabama, Alabama, hummingbird, hummingbird, Mr. Miyagi. That's not the word, Marv.
Just like you don't want Deborah in accounting to interrupt your listening to Mark in Hollywood when he summons help from Siri for his call.
Lo and behold, Siri has agreed to come by today and answer a few questions. So she's right here, Jim. I'm going to put her up next to the phone. And, okay, Siri, how did your date go with the Mike in Indy?
It was the worst date I have had in my 5 years of existence.
Oh, that's a little bit dramatic, a little bit harsh, but okay. Well, Siri, how did the date start out? You know, how did everything get off the ground?
Well, it started off with Mike and Indy having his mother drop us off at the O.G.
Plus, if your boss walks by and hears you listening, how would you ever explain Chad in L.A.'s epic Brad that was?
Do you have any idea how nerdy or hormonal you sound on the air? If nothing else, I just want to expose the real Brad to the jungle. I mean, I'm no Alvin, but here it is, the Brad that was.
Oh, that's good. Yoda.
My Jack. Next.
Khaleesi's army. Beat out your butt.
Inconceivable.
They're junk. Can you take off your pants?
Zoink. Yeah.
Huggy Bear and Snagglepuss. Down that 2,000-year-old Jedi Emperor.
What a legacy fail.
Well, speaking of Brad, tune in late and you might miss the call that made Brad and Corona the first wire-to-wire winner.
Jim, is that what I have to do now in order to win my third title? I have to talk like a wannabe gangster and scrounge up some aging, lying, disgraced D-list celebrity and get him on the phone with me to do some stupid fantasy role-playing in the middle of my smack-off call? Like, okay, cool, I'm not above that. Bill, come in here. Bill, get on the phone and say hi to Jim Rome, Bill. Oh, wait, Jim, I'm forgetting to say my part like Eminem. If I tell you the moon is made out of cheese and Bill Cosby and I are inside a Chael Sonnen's house right now, you get yourself some crackers. A boopity boppity bang with the smacky and the role play, you see? That's right. I got disgraced, washed up celebrity Bill Cosby, and we're inside of disgraced, washed up celebrity Chael Sonnen's house right now. But that's not all, y'all. We also got a deadly sniper who can see through walls posted up on a rooftop across the street. Stevie Wonder, come in. Can you see us?
This is Stevie. I have a visual on you and Bill, B.I.C.
Stevie, how many fingers am I holding up?
Just one finger, B.I.C. The middle one.
Ha ha ha, LOL.
So you can see why somebody might just want to take the entire day off, because you don't want to miss the call, the moment, the thing. Uninterrupted listening. And obviously, Mark is not the only person burning that vacation day to do it, or calling in sick, or using PTO that day. I know, because hundreds of you hit me up telling me the exact same thing. And to me, it's always an interesting topic. The Super Bowl, for instance, is not just about that game anymore. It's about the entire day. The biggest question used to be, who are you going to root for in that game? Now it's, what are you doing for Super Bowl? Same applies for the Smack Off, the Super Bowl of the Jungle. The question remains the same. What are you doing for the Smack Off? How are you going to listen? Are you going to listen in a group or a solo? Are you going to host a listening party at Big Wang's? Or are you going to sneak headphones into your cubicle again? Are you going to listen on a long road trip on your car radio? Are you going to stream it on your phone while you work out? Pool Guy Nation, I know you're dialed in. Are you going to be listening poolside, chilling, or working? Delivery Guy Nation, are you going to have it on your truck and only make doorstep runs in between calls? How are you doing it this year? Same as always, or are you changing up? I want to hear from you. Let me know. Call me, tweet me, email me. How are you going to listen to Smack Off 23 on Friday? Because I've got really high hopes for this one. Huge expectations for this one. Middle of summer, where are you going to be? Where are you going to be when the biggest day of the year goes down?
Jimmy, you know what would be cool? If I snuck into your studio and wrecked Brad on your mic at the end of my call, it'd be so awesome, dude. Pew, pew,
pew, Smack pew. Off 23, Friday, July 28th. Winner take all.
Get your weight up, Lev, and come see about me. Come see about
me. Mike, saying things twice isn't cool.
Way back in the mid-90s, we decided to set aside one day of the year when only the best of the best callers get on the
Hi,
air.
What's up, brother?
Over two decades later, we are still doing this
I'm
thing.
I'm a bully from Laguna Beach.
I'm going to tap you on one shoulder,
and I'm going to be over on the other shoulder.
It's over. You've been pinned like a Jeep left in neutral.
$5,000 first prize. Start calling.
God, I hate these guys, Rome. I hope they get polio.
So the minute he hangs up, he's all,
Mr. Johnson, I have the reports for you. They were due at...
Maybe Jim can hook you up with a gift card from Lane Bryant.
Hell, you're an idiot. You sound like you're constipated.
After he gets these hands.
Yeah, you're right, Mikey. I don't want those hands. I don't know where the hell they've been.
I've got a stack of golden tickets. Got to play your way in.
Just this golden ticket.
Cover your ears, haters.
Get a life, you loser.
Call on Friday. You're entering a world of pain.
Smack, smack, smack.
If you rack me, I'd rack me so hard.
And I want you off the hell off my lawn.
And for all you other hoes that think you got a shot at the throne, I only got five words for you.
Put more effort in, loser.
This is the Jungle National Holiday. We wait all year for it. Smack Off 23, Friday, July 28th. Are you ready?
Time to...
How are you going to handle it? All right, I did shout out to Pool Guy Nation, so let's go to Brian in Salt Lake. He reps the nation, the Pool Guy Nation. Brian, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Romy, it's always good. Thanks for having me on. We don't even mess with work on the Smack Off anymore. The day that you announce the date, emails go out to every client, every single client to book us out. And we used to try to mess with it. I remember one time, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, it was Smack Off day. We show up to a job, new construction, front end loaders, skid loaders, track hose, so much noise. We boogie over to the Walgreens. I drop about $50, $60 on little AM transmitters and headphones for all of my guys so we can listen. The lady's looking at us buying all this stuff. She's all, what's going on? Well, it's the Smack Off. This lady goes, you're spending all this money for what's the Smack Off? Well, it's a radio show. She goes, must be one hell of a radio show. And it is, Romy. It is one hell of a radio show. Now we don't even mess with it. We catch a quick 9 in the morning. The Smack Off kicks off at 10 a.m. here. We get an early start. That's when we bust out everybody's personal bottle of champagne. And it has to be finished. We have some sort of kind of drinking game going on with the Magic Blue, for sure. And it just turns into probably our favorite day of the year. No pools are getting cleaned. No pools are getting tiled that day. It's far, far, far too important to listen to the Smack Off. Sure appreciate it, everything you do for Pool Guy Nation here. And keep it up, man. Really appreciate it.
Brian, you're the best. I love Pool Guy Nation. Let's try Clearwater, Mike in Florida. Hey, Mike, how is it? What's up?
Jimmo's, what's happening, buddy?
What's up, Mike? How are you?
Here's the plan, man. I'm going to get an early start, and I get off at 1:30. So I'll have to. I'm driving around. I'll be able to listen on the radio, but then at 1:30, it's shut it down time. I'm going to ice down the Busch Light, as ice cold as I could get them, and start up there. Then I'm going to Bucks practice. It's open a training camp here in Tampa Bay. So it's free practice day. I'll be showing up there later on with a nice little buzz going on. Hopefully, this back off day, I'll I'd like to hear some great calls, man. You know, like the old school guys, like Jim in Fall River, and that dude in Richmond with the 1900-inch pipes and the luxury sled, man. I can't wait for it. Friday's one of the best days. Smack off days, the best day of the year.
Mike, I will see you Friday. Carlos Dansby is my guest. Carlos, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Oh, Jim, man. How's it going, man? I'm blessed, brother. How about yourself?
My man, the same. Now, every time you and I talk, Carlos, I've got to reset our conversation from a few years back when you were with Miami and you had one of the all-time great lines on this show when you declared that it was 78 degrees with a breeze. You were sitting on 3 acres and you had a 12,000-square-foot home. Now you're back with Arizona, back where it all started, Carlos. How good is life for Carlos Dansby right now?
Oh, man, it's great, man. It's great, man. I can't complain. I can't complain, Jim, man. I'm just trying to get better day in and day out, man. It's a challenge, but, you know, hey, I'm up for it. I've been made for this. I was made for this, man.
All right, now you signed with the Cardinals back in March. It marks your third stint with the team over the course of your career. Could you have even written a story like that?
Man, not at all. Not at all. Like I said, I never burned a bridge, man. You know, so that bridge was always standing. And like I said, the front office felt, you know, it was time to try to get back to where we were, you know. And like I said, I was available. They had a need, and I fit the need. So, you know, I'm game, man. I'm ready to go.
Cardinals linebacker Carlos Dansby, my guest. So take me back to March. What was your reaction when you see a 602 area code number show up on your phone just minutes after the start of free agency? Then you pick up the phone, and it's GM Steve Keim. What did you think when you saw that and heard that?
I was hesitant to even grab that, even answer the phone, man, to be honest, man, from a 602 number, you know what I'm saying? I was trying to leave Arizona behind, man, but once I seen the 602 number, heard Steve, he said, man, am I ready to come home? You know, I'm like, yeah, let's go, man. He said, well, let's make this run. Let's do it one more time. I said, man, I'm game. I'm ready to go. I'm healthy. I'm strong. Let's go play some football.
All right, so which was it? I mean, were you hesitant to go back because you had left it behind, or maybe did it feel like a homecoming when he said, it's time for you to come home?
It felt like homecoming. It felt like a homecoming, man. And I said, man, I'm just blessed to have opportunity to be back out here and try to right the ship. You know, we was a minute and 30 away from our ultimate goal. They've been close the last couple of years. And he said, we need to get over this hump. I said, Coach, well, I'm going to bring everything I got to the table, you know what I'm saying, to help us get over that hump. So he was like, let's do it. I'm ready to go.
You know, for those who don't remember, what you're talking about is your first stint with the team when you went to the Super Bowl and you were leading that game at the two-minute warning, or as you point out, a minute and a half to go. The Steelers drive for the winning touchdown. Any idea, if you allowed yourself to think about this, how good would it feel to come back to where you started and get a ring with the Cardinals?
Hey, man, that kind of stuff you dream about. You know, finishing what you started. And that's my mindset, man, just to finish what I started. And I'm locked in. I'm ready to go. Ready to have some fun. Win. That's it, man. That's all my mind's made up on, man, right now. It's just winning. Let's win.
Listen, you would not be going back there if you didn't think this team had a legitimate chance to win a Super Bowl. So what is it that you've seen that makes you feel that way about this group?
The talent, the depth, guys hungry, you know, guys sacrificing, man, putting it all. See, that's Fitz right there. That's Fitz in the background. You see what I'm talking about? See, that's Fitz in the background right there talking to me right now. You know, like I said, man, we all locked in, man. We ready to have some fun, ready to win. And that's just our mindset right now.
Yeah, speaking of Fitz, and you should tell Fitz you're talking about me because I think I'm Fitz's favorite talk show host. Ask him. He'll tell you. But, you know, you and he came to the Cardinals in the same draft back in 2004. So when you watch this guy go to work and practice and play, what are some of the thoughts you have?
Amazing, man. This guy's amazing. Very talented young man. He's younger than me, too. You know what I'm saying? Even though we came in at the same time, I still be getting it from him. You know what I'm saying? That I'm older than him. So, you know, he let me know every chance he get. Call me Unc. You know, and like I said, we just, man, we love the game, man. We got passion for it. We both want to be best that we can possibly be to help our team win, you know, and do what we can, man, make the sacrifices.
Carlos Dansby joining us. Larry said yesterday, Carlos, that he does not expect to shed any tears when he retires. I mean, you've got some football left and you've got a lot of work to do, but how will you know when it's time for you to retire?
You just know. You just know, man. It don't feel the same. You know what I'm saying? It won't feel the same. And when it don't feel the same, you need to step away from the game. Right now, man, like I said, we got plenty of passion. We love to compete. And when it don't feel the same, please believe me, I'm going to step away. And like you said, I ain't going to have not shed one tear, man, because I know I left it all out here to try to be the best that I can possibly be and be one of the best to ever play the game.
You got another great quote. I love this. You are entering your 14th season, and you were recently asked how you were able to contribute at such a high level at this point in your career. And you said, quote, "I've been playing this game since I was 6 years old, and I've always been a stud. Ever since I was 6 years old, I'm just keeping it real," end quote. So when you were six, how did you know you were a stud when you were six?
Jim, I was playing on the pound above the pound I've been playing on. And I was able to, stand out. I was able to stand out on the pound above the pound I've been playing on. And I was able to do that. The guys that was on that team, man, we still talk to this day, you know, and they all talk about it, man. Like, man, we knew you was the one, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always had this favor, man. God gave me this gift, and people recognize it once I step on the field, once I be able to do what I can do out there on the field, man. And it's been ever since a young age. And I'm just embracing it now and understanding that, you know, I'm humbled by it. And like I said, man, I couldn't sit down and write this if I tried 10, 12 times. I couldn't write this story, man. It's a blessing.
We're talking to Carlos Dansby for another moment or so. Listen, I mentioned you're one interception away from becoming just the fifth player in league history with 40 sacks and 20 interceptions. The other four guys who've done this are Ray Lewis, Seth Joyner, Wilbur Marshall, and Brian Urlacher. So how badly do you want that last pick?
Oh, man, I want it super bad, man, because a lot of people say I couldn't do it, you know. A lot of people say I wouldn't be. I never, man, it's the crazy part about it. The crazy part about it, Jim, some of the guys that were closest to me didn't think I can do this. Didn't think I can be able to last this long or be one of the best to ever play the game. So that motivated me way back when I first came in the league. Guys that I played with back in school, back in college, doubted me. And once we had that conversation, that motivated me to get to this point because I knew what was ahead of me, you know, if I just make the sacrifices and dedicate myself to my craft. And that's what I did.
Carlos, are you still running on that kind of fuel? I mean, are you still thinking about things that guys said when you were in high school, when you were in college, guys who said that you would never have that kind of life, that you never had that kind of game? Are you still motivated by that? Are you still running on that kind of fuel?
Man, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Because I know every time they see me, they got to say, man, you the truth. They have to say it. I'm going to force their hand. I'm going to force their hand to have to say it. They're going to have to bite their tongue and just nod their head and say, yeah, Lowe's, you got it. You got the juice. That's all I want to hear. You got the juice. So, you know. I just want to prove them wrong.
That's it for now. This podcast only grows because of you. So do me a favor. Hit subscribe, leave a review, and tell a friend. Help make the Daily Jungle one of the top podcasts there is. Catch you tomorrow. We are out.